Welcome to Radar Contact, the audio show that teaches pilots how to speak professionally and with confidence to air traffic control. If you have avoided contact with air traffic control because you just didn't know what to say or didn't know how to say it, Radar Contact is going to change the way you fly and communicate. And now, here's your host, airline pilot, author, and host of ATCCommunication.com, Jeff Canarish.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of Radar Contact. Lately, we've been covering some fairly advanced radio work, including radio calls made to ATC inside of Class Charlie and even Class Bravo airspace. What I'd like to do today is talk to you about the most basic of radio procedures and technique, kind of move in the opposite direction from the way we have been going lately. And the reason I'd like to return to fundamentals has to do with some recent experiences teaching radio workshops to groups around the Atlanta area. I expected to walk into these workshops covering more advanced radio calls, just like I do with you, under the assumption that most everyone knows the fundamentals. I guess you would call it a bit of an eye-opener, because what I discovered is many pilots don't have as firm of a grip on the basics of radio work as I had originally thought. Now, I don't know where you sit on the continuum of radio knowledge. You know, some people know almost everything there is to know about radio work and need only a little polish to sound like a pro. Others know virtually nothing about radio procedure and need me to start from the very beginning. As I said, I don't know where you sit on that continuum. What I do know is almost everyone, myself included, can benefit from reviewing the basics. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. So let's get started. When you make initial contact with a new air traffic controller, you should begin your radio transmission by stating the controller's identity. The controller's identity is the name of his facility plus his facility's ATC type. I'll explain that in more detail by breaking it down. First, there is the controller's location. Usually, his facility name is the name of the city or town where that facility is located. For example, Los Angeles or Sioux City or Las Vegas. But names are not always tied to cities. For example, the name of the airport tower in Kansas City is International Tower, not Kansas City Tower. Sometimes facility names are the names of people. For example, the airport in East Elmhurst, New York is named LaGuardia, after Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia. Nearby, the airport in Queensboro is named Kennedy, after President John F. Kennedy. And there's thousands of exceptions, and I'm sure you know a few. In any case, you get the idea. If you don't know the name of the facility, where can you look to find out? If you're going to talk to a controller at an airport, you can look either at an airport taxi diagram, or in the FAA's airport facility directory, or in any of the published airport directories put out by various flying organizations such as the AOPA. If you're going to talk to a controller at an en route center, well then look at a low altitude en route chart. Those are generally reserved for IFR use, but they come in real handy even if you're flying VFR. And on those en route charts, you'll find little boxes on the chart with scalloped edges. These are sometimes called postage stamp boxes. These will have the name of the facility and the frequency of the air traffic control center nearest your location. The second part of an ATC facility's name is its type. Examples of type are approach control, or approach for short, tower, ground, and center for an en route air traffic control center. When you put it all together, name plus facility type, you get a complete identity such as Cleveland Center, Binghamton Tower, San Angelo Ground, etc. Okay, simple enough. Now comes the question. Why are you required to begin your radio call with the identity of the ATC facility you're calling when making initial contact? Well, here's why. And this has happened more than once. And I'm getting this information by looking at incident reports filed with NASA in their Aviation Safety and Reporting System. For example, and I'm speaking very generally here, a pilot calls an airport tower for landing clearance, only he does not begin his radio call by saying the name of the tower. The pilot gets landing clearance and then lands at the airport. After landing, the airport's tower supervisor sends a message to the pilot asking him to contact the tower by telephone. The tower supervisor wants to know why the pilot landed without clearance. The pilot says he's received clearance, or he did receive clearance from the tower. The tower supervisor insists he did not get clearance. The pilot goes back to his airplane, turns on the master avionics switch, and discovers he had the wrong tower frequency tuned in. Apparently, he had been talking to another tower at another airport and got clearance to land from the wrong tower. If he had made it a point in his initial contact by stating the name of the tower he thought he was calling, the air traffic controller at the incorrect tower would have pointed out the pilot was calling the wrong tower. He would have pointed out the error, and it's kind of a wake-up call. But if you don't identify the tower you're calling, there's no opportunity for that controller to say, hey, buddy, you're calling the wrong place. Now, it seems kind of silly, but this kind of mistake happens more often than you would think. It's very, very important to say the full identity of the ATC agency you're calling whenever you make initial contact with that agency on the radio. Now, here's something interesting I discovered when teaching a workshop. Some pilots begin by saying the name of the ATC agency on every radio call, not just the radio call to make initial contact. For example, Miami Center, November 3567 Zulu, 3500 VFR. Then Miami Center answers, November 3567 Zulu, Miami Center, Roger. Maintain VFR and advise me before changing altitudes. The pilot replies, Miami Center, November 3567 Zulu, will advise before changing altitudes. Here's the deal. Once you have determined that you are talking to the correct ATC agency when making initial contact, you should not keep repeating the ATC identity in each follow-up radio call. As long as you do not change frequencies, you will keep on talking to the same ATC agency. You've already established you're talking to the right person. You know who they are. They know who they are. There's no need to keep saying their name in each subsequent radio call. Ah, but you say, if that's true, why does ATC say my call sign in every follow-up radio call? The answer is there may be 10, 20, 30, or more different aircraft call signs on the frequency. The air traffic controller must use your full call sign in every transmission to distinguish among those 30 other pilots he's talking to. While there may be 30 other pilots on the frequency, there is only one air traffic controller on the frequency to talk to. So there's no need to keep repeating his name. While we're on the subject of call signs, I want to reemphasize something I've said in the past. I guess it needs repeating because I saw some pilots at a recent workshop mess up their call signs in practice radio calls. Here it comes. A call sign always, always, always begins with the first letter in your aircraft's registration number known as the prefix. For U.S. registered aircraft, the prefix is the letter November. If you prefer, you may substitute your aircraft's make, model, or type for the prefix. In other words, if you're flying a Cessna Skyhawk, you may begin your call sign with Cessna or Skyhawk, then the rest of your registration number after the prefix. This rule holds true whether you're stating your full call sign or your abbreviated call sign. Always, always, always include the prefix or your make, model, or type and the remaining digits and letters after the prefix. Always. Now, I said this at the workshop I held, and yet pilots still dropped the prefix or the make, model, or type and only gave me the letters and digits of their call sign. For example, if an aircraft call sign was Piper 909 Zulu Alpha, the person attending the workshop began a practice radio call with 909 Zulu Alpha. No prefix, no make, no model, no type. This is 100% wrong. I don't know why so many pilots do this. It's especially common when using an abbreviated call sign. I can count on one hand the number of pilots I'll hear in a month who remember to include their make, model, or type when stating the letters and digits of their abbreviated call sign. I'd call this behavior laziness, but I think it's more of a bad habit passed from pilot to pilot. I hope you're paying attention and become a trendsetter on the radio by using your call sign correctly. Another related mistake I come across is the following. Some pilots include both their aircraft's make, model, or type, plus the letter November when saying their call sign. For example, Cessna November 9130 Delta. That's not right. It's either Cessna 9130 Delta, or it's November 9130 Delta. It's not both Cessna and November. Got that? You probably don't make that mistake anyways, right? We spent a lot of time talking about talking on the radio. I want to spend some time with you now talking about listening. One of the trends I've seen at workshops is poor listening skills. In the workshop, I give the pilots a task to complete that occupies a large part of their attention. Then I feed them radio calls. I expect some pilots to ask for a repeat of the radio call because they were too occupied to absorb all the details. What I found in reality is almost all pilots ask for a repeat when they are busy with other tasks. Well, here's the trick to listening. Don't multitask. If a radio call comes in for you, stop doing busy work and listen. Now, make sure you understand me correctly. Maintaining control of the airplane is not busy work. You should never sacrifice aircraft control to answer the radio. Pilots have always followed this basic priority to remain safe. Aviate first, navigate second, and communicate last. What I'm saying is, if you want to hear and digest a radio call the first time you get it from ATC, quit fiddling around in the cockpit and focus on the incoming transmission. Another technique I use to help me hear and absorb radio calls from ATC is to try and anticipate what might be coming next. For example, if I'm approaching a point where I expect ATC to give me a turn, I mentally prepare to hear those instructions. Again, a word of caution here, some pilots let their expectations influence what they actually hear, and this can be dangerous. For example, let's say I'm following two aircraft towards an airport. The first airplane in line is told to turn to a heading of 050. The second airplane in line is told to turn to a heading of 050. I'm anticipating what? That ATC will also turn me to a heading of 050. Then ATC actually says, turn to a heading of 090. You can see the setup for failure, right? The 9 in 090 can sound like 5 on the radio. Of course, if ATC says 9er, it should make the number a little bit more distinguishable from 5. But let's say I'm really anticipating a heading of 050. When ATC says 090, my brain, which was anticipating 050, causes my ear to hear 050 instead. And, of course, now I'm turning the airplane in the wrong direction. Who knows what kind of trouble that's going to get me into. So when I say anticipate the next radio call, I mean be ready for the possibilities given where you are and where you're planning to end up. In other words, anticipate the possibilities and then listen for the specifics. Keep your ears open to what is actually said, not what you expected to hear. I've covered some of the more fundamental parts of radio work. There are certainly more, and we'll cover them in future episodes. If I've raised any questions in your mind through this discussion, give me a shout at jeff@atccommunication.com, and I'll do my best to answer you. In our last show, I asked for volunteers to help me edit my newest book on radio procedures and techniques. I got more volunteers than was needed for the task, and for that I'm extremely grateful. If you volunteered and I told you the team was already full, first, thank you for your generosity. Second, I have your name, and you can be sure I'll tap you on the shoulder for another project in the future. If you still have the time and the willingness to help at that time, we'll put our heads together and do something good for our community of pilots. If what I just said is news to you, let me fill you in. I have a new workbook on radio procedure and technique in the pipeline. The workbook is a 200-plus page collection of questions based on specific scenarios you might encounter when you fly. It's a self-teaching course in radio work designed to complement my original book, Radio Mastery for VFR Pilots. And I currently have 11 pilots who listen to the show helping me to edit the workbook. As soon as I've received the draft copies back from this great group of pilots, I'll put the finishing touches on the workbook and make it available to you. I'll have an announcement in an upcoming show on how to get your hands on the published version of the workbook as soon as it's ready. Before we get to your question of the week, I have a brief bit of administrative business to cover with you. I've been hard at work for the last year and a half on various projects for you, almost without break, and I'm beginning to feel it in my bones that it's time to take a vacation for a week. I'm telling you this so you'll know if I don't immediately get back in touch with you over the next week or so, it's because I'm trying to kick back and recharge. Let me be clear. I will be answering email as it comes in. But while I'm on vacation, I may not get back to you within a few hours as I normally do. Please be patient and know I'm still right here at the other end of your internet connection. I'll get back to you as soon as I'm able. And now, let's get to your question of the week. You are flying across southern Mississippi talking to Houston Center. You are using Houston Center for VFR flight following. You notice the frequency has been dead silent for the last 5 minutes, so you decide to check in with Houston to make sure you're still in radio contact. You say,
Cessna 9130 Delta, radio check.
There's no answer, so you try again, this time reducing the radio frequency squelch until you hear static, and you say,
Cessna 9130 Delta, radio check.
Again, there's no reply from Houston. You can see your radio is powered, the transmit light illuminates when you press the transmit button, and you can hear the side tone of your own voice in your headset when you transmit. The radio and your headset connection is good, so you've apparently flown out of radio range of the controller you had been talking to. What you need now is a new frequency for ATC that works for your location. You remember that I told you you can look up the frequency for en route centers on a low altitude en route chart, but in your case, the only chart you have in the cockpit is a sectional chart, and the sectional chart does not show frequencies for en route centers. Here's your question. What can you do to determine a good frequency for Houston Center for your location? When you think you know the answer to that question, go to the link atccommunication.com/answers. There you will find a complete answer to this week's question, as well as a complete explanation of how that answer was derived. Music for the show was provided by Kevin McLeod and Competech.com on a Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. If you're flying this week, I hope you have a great time and beautiful weather. I'll be thinking about you as I'm kicking back and watching airplanes fly over the beach. I'm Jeff Canarish for ATCCommunication.com saying, be well, keep in touch, and fly safe.